Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity of presenting my work, and thank you for being here this morning with me. My name is Jordi Francis. I have been working at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with Rob Annex, and I'm going to talk about a novel system for high-resolution and near-continuous measurements of N2O isotope fluxes. So we already hear something about it's important to measure frequently, but I will give you a little more about that, and then I will talk about the system that we built in our university to measure with heat resolution and near continuously. And we can do a nice analogy about the resolution and the near continuously comparing with pictures or movies, because high resolution is going to refer to how many points of N2O concentration about time we are using to compute one of those fluxes, and near continuously will be how many fluxes I am going to give you along a day. So instead of seeing a picture every 15 days or a week, you will be seeing like a movie of what is happening in N2O emissions. So I'm going to tell you a little about the sampling interval I'm going to use. Parkin in 2008, he did an experiment to show us how important is the sampling interval, because as you can see here in this chart, is if you increase the sampling interval, the probability of getting a good estimate for the cumulative N2O emissions is going to drop drastically. In his experiment, he measured like 4 times a day during 21 days. And he resampled from that, and he got that if you are measuring like once every 1, 2, or 3 days, you are going to have a pretty good estimate. But it doesn't happen. When people measure manually, they will measure like once a week or once every 2 weeks. So the probability of getting a good estimate is going to be like really, really low, like 30-20%. And why that happens? Well, that happens for something that we already seen. And these are hot moments. So if each of the red dots is the main daily flux of N2O, we can see that in a short period of time, like 4 or 5 days, we have a really high N2O emissions. And these N2O emissions will represent like around 50% of the total cumulative N2O emissions, but they will only represent like 5 or 7% of the total time observation. So it's really important we measure as frequent as we can so we can capture those hot moments and have a good estimation of the cumulative N2O flux. And now I'm going to talk about the system that we built, and it's really cool. So I'm going to start for the isotopic N2O analyzer from Los Gatos, and that's the core of our system. And this analyzer is as big as I am, maybe 5-6 feet long, and it weighs like 170 pounds, so it's heavy, sturdy, hard to move. But we like it because it's really fast. It can measure the spectrum of N2O in less than 3 milliseconds, and it has a great precision, around 0.0.3 parts per billion. And I'm going to focus in that little chamber that we have in that little part that we have here that is called the optical cell, and is where everything happens. So we have that cell, and what is going to happen is that the instrument will throw this laser beam that is tuned to hit the N2O particles. So it will get into the chamber, it will hit the particles, it will lose some energy, and measuring how much energy we lost, we will know the concentration of N2O. But we have here two super reflective mirrors. So I say that this chamber is about 12 inches long, and the volume will be approximate of 1 liter. And this laser is going to bounce between those two mirrors around 10,000 times. So the length of the laser is going to increase from those 12 inches to almost 2 miles. And that's why it's so precise. But what we are paying for that is that we need to recirculate air continuously through that chamber. And as I say, it has a big volume. So how are we are going to connect this instrument with the chambers that we designed? With a gap path. And we have 4 chambers and 1 instrument, so we built that gas path that will connect all the chambers through the analyzer, and we have some air pumps and several bulbs. So what is going to happen when we are sampling, for example, for this chamber here that will be closed? The air will run from the chamber to the analyzer, and from the analyzer back to the chamber, so it will be in a closed loop. And then we will go to the next chamber. But before going to the next chamber, we need to purge both the internal chamber of the analyzer and all the tubing between the chamber and the analyzer, because otherwise we will have contamination from the previous sampling that we have been doing. And these valves here look like they are just two-way valves, but they are three-way valves, and that's what allows us to purge the chamber inside of the analyzer and all the tubing between the analyzer and the soil chambers. So now I'm going to talk about how are we going to control this opening and closing of the valves and putting on the pump. So this is the schematics of the digital control logic that we built. So what is going on here is, for example, if we are measuring chamber number one, we need to have the purging valves closed. We need to open the inlet valve for chamber number one, the outlet valve from chamber number one. But what is going to happen if we have rain? So if we have rain, we have also a rain sensor that is hooked to that system, and the chambers will open, so the rain will get into the chamber. And we put all together in that really nice printed circuit board that we have some lights so we can see what is actually going. So if something is going wrong, the lights will don't match with what is going on in the field. And now if we follow these cables, I already talked about the pumps and the valves and how everything is going to switch, but I'm going to talk now about the chambers. So if we follow, and before talking about the chambers, here a little memory to my grandpa. He was a pig farmer. And now let's go to the chambers. So we built four automatic chambers, and as you can see, they have a linear actuator here, and they have like three limit switches, one at the end, one at the beginning, one in the middle in case something goes wrong. And in that little box, we will send the signal from the instrument and from that digital logic that will say, hey, close the chamber. And when we close the chamber, let's see, yeah. When we close the chamber, we will put on the pumps, we will put the valve that needs to be closed and needs to be open. We will be measuring in intervals of 20 or 10 minutes, and then the chamber will open automatically. We will purge the N2O analyzer, and we will purge the tubing that is linking the chamber with the analyzer. And I'm going to show you a little more, another more picture of that chamber from the top. And it was in a rainy day, and you can see that everything is like really wet. Here we have the vent of the chamber, one of the limit switches at the end of the run for the linear actuator. You also can see that there is one sampling port for manual sampling in case we want to sample manually and make some comparisons. And here will be the inlet, the air coming from the analyzer, and then the air in the chamber will go to the analyzer if we follow this path. This part of the gas path. So it's covered with a black sleeve, so we don't have to fight with rodents and people running on the tubing. And if we follow that tubing, we will get into the trailer where we have our analyzer. And you can see here the tubing is going into that gas path that we made 1 year ago. And it will get into the instrument. The instrument will do all the analysis. It will get recorded in the hard drive of the instrument, and then the air will go back to the chamber in a closed loop. Here you can see also the digital logic control that we are using to opening and close the valves and the chamber and put everything together synchronized. We are also have an air conditioning, and behind the screen of the analyzer there is also fan, and both of them controlled by a differential thermostat, so we don't want the trailer to get too hot, because if the temperature increases too much, the analyzer will drift. And here you can see also all the power control that we have for the analyzer, the air conditioning, and the different parts of the system. And now just a really cool video of the full system working in Arlington, Wisconsin during that last season. So here you can see one of the chambers. These are 5 TMs, temperature and moisture at different, and that's the trailer where we have everything, the hoses going to the chambers in the middle of the soybeans. And here you can see one, two of the chambers, and the other two are just back there. So that's my system, and that's, and now I'm going to show a little of the data that we got from last season. So here is the data that we got from the four chambers that we had: red, purple, green, and yellow. And we got like 6,152 to access over 133 days. And the scale here is in log, because otherwise you cannot appreciate the how many points we got, and the little fluctuation that is going on when we have like planting and fertilization. You can see that the spikes are the, we have those N2O hot moments with the spikes. And you also can see, if you are relating it with N2O emission, that after big rain events there is also spike here. So to show you that a little better, I choose chamber number 4, and here we can see also these hot moments that will represent in terms of time like 5% of the time, that was in this case 4 or 5 days, but they will represent like more than 55% of the cumulative N2O flux for last season. So thank you very much for your attention, and if you have any question I will be happy to answer.
About 4 minutes for questions, if anybody has any questions.
I didn't see any N2O after flux or
I know, but we have the data. I was afraid of not having time to analyze the full set of data, but yeah, we have isotope N2O data from for the site preference, the 15N, and then we also have delta 18O for the oxygen, so we have the 4 main isotope for N2 emissions.
On the last graph that you showed, so there were those 2 events that were pretty much, what triggered those? I see that there was kind of a rain event.
Yeah, there is a rain event here, and then we had the fertilization on the 11th of June. So after we stopped measuring for fertilization, we have to take the chambers out. So just when we put back the chambers on the field, we have the first hot moment for the N2O emission. And then 2 days after, because we had that really big rain event, we have the other burst of N2O emission.
For your isotope, were you looking at natural abundance, or is there labeled fertilizers or something? I mean, is this sensitive enough to do natural abundance?
I think it's sensitive enough to do natural abundance, and we are doing that. So we are just comparing the levels that we have in the normal levels to make comparison with the abundance that will produce any kind of fertilizer, or even without fertilizer, those N2O emissions. So.
Any other questions? I have one if there's nobody else. How long did it take you to set it up, to take everything out, and then to put things back in after, say, your fertilization event?
The first time, it took me forever. But then I get used to do it, and I can do it in 1 day. Well, maybe no, half a day. But yeah, it's...
For 4 chambers, and that was 4 chambers in 1 plot, correct?
4 chambers in 1 plot.
So, 4 replicates.
So if I go there in the morning, like 7 in the morning, I will be done 12, 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I take them out, clean them, put them back. It's a lot of work, but we have huge quantities of data, and we have isotopes too.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a chamber effect during rain events of standing water inside the chamber?
Not really.
Okay.
I have noticed that if there is a really high rain event, I have to be careful because some of the tubing can be plugged, but we didn't notice any other problem side of that.
A real quick question, we have about 1 minute, but I trust you're an engineer by training?
I am a real engineer, so I am not a real engineer, and
okay,
I am not the real agronomist.
Well, I'm not an engineer by any means, and I'm a soil scientist, and I appreciate the value of these continuous measurements.
Thank you.
And so this is very cool stuff. The challenge for a guy like me is I can't do what you do. What do you think in terms of, once the system is built, let's say, what kind of personnel do you need for like maintenance and just operating the thing? Is it a full-time position, a half-time position, what do you think?
Once the system is working, I was going like every 2 days and spend less than an hour there. I was just cleaning the chambers, making sure that everything was working, and you can set up your measurement frequency from the instrument, so everything is set up and you don't need to know, like, it's low level. Everyone can do it. That's great.
Excellent. On that note, let's move to the next talk. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.